ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Welcome back to the New Bhadrika Ashram. Today's class is brought to you by the people who bring you the language cards. This is an international project. You'll see on this ring a series of cards, and each one of them has a language. And in the process of distributing books, you might meet somebody that speaks Urdu. And if that was the case, then you would show them this card after you hand them an Urdu book. And if you just happen to meet somebody who speaks Chinese, then you would show them this card. Or perhaps German. I never heard of that language before. Kiswahili. Anybody here? Kiswahili? Portuguese? You do, Nikola? I never knew that. Okay, Thai, wow. Polish, Italian, Nepali, Greek, Farsi, Amharic, Danish, Vietnamese, Estonian, Zulu, no, Thai, more Thai, Russian, Arabic, Swedish, Spanish, Japanese, Korean, Icelandic, Hungarian, Hebrew, Gujarati, Armenian, Assamese, and Telugu, to name a few. So these are now available. Anyone can download these from our website, distributebooks.com. Thanks to the hard work of Nagar Kirtan Prabhu and his team all over the world to put these together for us. This is a usable prototype, but they're in the process of improving these cards as we speak. They're working in the laboratory. That's why Nagar Kirtan's not in here right now. So the other night we began speaking about the concept of failure is the pillar to success. Do you remember that? And I got partway through the presentation. And then yesterday I intended to continue, but there were a lot of new people here last night. So I decided to speak about how you're not your body and so forth. But I'd like to finish the presentation. Does anybody remember that presentation the other night? Do you remember, anybody remember anything specific about it? Or would you like me to give you a quick review before I ask such things? Quick review? Okay, so the presentation was called Failure is the Pillar to Success. I mentioned Benjamin Franklin. Do you remember that? What is he famous for that I mentioned? First volunteer fire department. And what was his saying that related to the class? Ounce of prevention is worth? Pound of cure, yeah. And then I mentioned beware of Maya. We have to be careful because Maya presents a package that's perfectly suited for each victim. She sneaks in. So Srila Prabhupada mentioned that you're not sufficiently afraid of Maya and that it's a regulative principle that one should not fall from his exalted position. What's the price of liberty? Eternal vigilance, right. And the word vigilance, comes from the word vigil, which means to be awake. It also means keeping careful watch for possible danger or difficulties. This is vigilance. So how Maya sneaks in? Do you remember the three ways she gets through the door? First one's pride. Pride opens the door. And then there's a way that we invite her into the house. what invites her in. Laxity. So you start cutting corners and thinking that it doesn't matter. So then Maya feels free to come in. And then what allows her to stay permanently in the house? Justification. So then I justify whatever setbacks I'm having and say, oh, you know, it's inevitable, it doesn't matter, and so forth. And then she can just stay. So then we talked about how attitude is everything, and I justified that by giving this quotation from Prabhupada where he said, advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the follower. And then we talked about some risky attitudes. I am advanced. I am liberated. I can cut corners. I am independent. And if you want to lock the door in Maya, here's some safe attitudes. I'm not liberated. I'm never above chastisement. And remember that good advice is not often served in our favorite flavor. I live to be corrected. And way to fortify and protect us from the attacks of Maya, how should your sadhana be?
Strict, serious, and sincere.
Thank you, Nirkula. Strict, serious, and sincere. So, Prabhupada also writes that one should keep one's eyes trained to spot offenses. One's own offenses. And then, how to fortify oneself continued to get a taste. You have to work for a taste and pray for it. And even if you get one molecule of taste, you'll be fortified against the various temptations that Maya puts before us. Then relationships. Have good relationships. Rupa Goswami mentions this in the Nectar of Instruction, even before he talks about chanting the holy names. He says, Dadati pratigunati kuyamakyati prachiti punkte bojayate chaiva shadvidam pratilakshanam. That's, there are six loving exchanges between one devotee and another, and those consist of giving gifts, accepting gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, and hearing others reveal their minds in confidence, giving prasad and accepting prasad. See, these six loving exchanges are very important, and Prabhupada says that this is how the Krishna consciousness movement started, and this is how it's been spread all over the world by this give and take. And it also is the way in which one fortifies oneself from Maya. Because if you have very open and vulnerable relationships with trusted devotees, then you have a place where you can talk about your realizations or your shortcomings, then it's very likely that you'll be able to correct yourself. Sometimes very advanced devotees find themselves in an unenviable position where everyone sees them as advanced, and they are, but then they feel that they have nobody to talk to when they do have some unwanted desire and an art in their heart. And instead of finding a place or a person, to discuss it with and find help, a confessor, so to speak, that the person then just tries to tolerate it and sooner or later may succumb to such a thing. And this is done because there's a way in which when one is seen as advanced, one doesn't want, in one way, to disappoint anybody and say, oh, by the way, I have this anarta. And then people might say, oh, you're not actually advanced. And then there's that sense that I shouldn't tell anybody. But it's very important to have people that you can talk to, that you can process all kinds of things that you're going through in different phases of your life so you can remain steady in Krishna consciousness. This is one of the most foundational principles of staying steady in devotional service. And then guidance. Find good guidance. And some types of devotees offer a certain kind of guidance, others offer another. And you may have more than one mentor or guide. And there's no harm in collecting them and having connections with those who can give good guidance at different times of your life for different reasons. But that's an extremely helpful way in which to move forward in one's devotional life. So then also, to fortify oneself, one should be balanced and nourished. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in regards to Gajendra. I've mentioned this, but here are the specific words that he mentions in his purport, that the devotees should have physical strength, enthusiasm, and sensual power. It means you have to keep yourself in a balanced state of life. If you get imbalanced, then it's easy to fall victim to Maya. So Prabhupada went for walks every day. And really, for his age, that's a good exercise. For anybody's age, it's a good exercise. Walking is very good. But that was specifically recommended to him by a doctor because he had had two heart attacks already on the ship, the boat. And he then went to the doctor. The doctor said, you have to walk vigorously every day. And Prabhupada followed it religiously. Every single morning, he would go out and do a vigorous walk. Hardly could anybody keep up with him. So he was very serious about keeping his cardiovascular system in good shape. And he also was careful about what he ate. He insisted that it had to be served hot, because this is Ayurvedic. You don't want to eat things that are when they're cold. And he was very regulated and clean and so forth. So at every phase of our life, there's a way in which we can keep this physical strength, enthusiasm, sensual power, so that we're fit to do our duties, to practice our sadhana. I mentioned previously about sleep. This is something, if you try to cheat on your sleep, then sleep will cheat you, because the brain needs a certain amount of sleep, and if you don't get it, you'll just nod out at inappropriate times, like during Bhagavatam class or any time. So take care of yourself. Then manana. Manana means that you should take time for reflection. Like today, Tushita Prabhu and I went for a walk up in the mountains. And we had a chance to look at the water and the mountains and the trees and just walk and talk and reflect on things that are going on. And we take in so much all the time. We're always taking in. So manana means take a little time to reflect on what you've taken in. Write it down. And think about the things that are most valuable to you. And deliberate also. What is my situation in life? And what are my goals? And Srimad Bhagavatam gives us different lessons of people who have fallen down from exalted positions of devotional service. And I'm going to mention them in just a minute, but before that, we'll take a few reflections. Anything that you heard so far that stuck with you, that you can take out of here in your kurta pocket, or a little bag or something. Hare Krishna. Yes.
The aspects of being physically strong, enthusiastic, and what was it?
Sensual strength.
Sensual strength. So everybody knows I've had quite a bit of sickness over the last 4 years since I've been here, and I'm starting to gather strength, and this is really important for me to... It's hard to break out of the routine of being sedentary. And that really strikes home. The need to be fit.
Yeah.
Exercise, walking.
Thank you for the testimonial. It's very important. And you also may not be able to do it all at once. I'm not talking to you specifically, but just as a general principle, because oftentimes there are mental obstacles due to inertia. It's hard to get going when you've been sedentary, and also the body has a way of developing patterns, so it doesn't like to get going. But so you have to take it a little bit at a time. So if it's true that an apple a day keeps the doctor away, then try taking an apple a day. And if you can't walk around the block, then just walk out to the mailbox and come back. And then the next day, go a few feet further and just keep moving until you get momentum. What else did you hear that stuck? Yes.
Erica Prabhupada mentions that it's a regular principle to not fall from the exalted position because it's taken so many lifetimes to get where we are, so...
Yeah. Yeah. You keep that as a guiding principle in life, to organize your life in such a way that you don't fall down. That's very important to have that clearly in mind. Nonetheless, I'm also going to talk in the second part of this class of how to make a comeback. Because in life, and in fact in the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned, Sopadam vulam bhajata priyasya tyaktanya bhavasya hare priyasaha priyeshaha vikarniyachchot patitam katanchid dhunati sarvam radisanivishtaha, which means that if somehow or other you do have a slip-up in devotional service, and that specific language is used, that somehow or other, as if it like came out of nowhere, then the remedial measure is that you keep practicing devotional service. So the fact that it's mentioned means that in the course of a lifetime, while we're practicing, we have to know how to make comebacks when needed. Two more. What did you hear? Yes.
The point about reflection stuck out to me because I really appreciate being reminded of that because every time I take time for that, I really feel it enriches my my overall well-being, spiritual, mental, emotional. And it's something that Pranatakarna Prabhu talks a lot about in his Bhagavad Gita classes. He uses the term... do I have faith in this? He said, like, we need to be checking in with ourselves, like, where we put our faith, and that really has helped me reflect on what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and is it really benefiting me?
Very nice, thank you. Reflections and taking time out to see where you are.
I thought that was a very powerful point about some devotees come to an elevated status and they feel like they, if they reveal their weakness to someone, they'll lose that elevated status.
Yeah, so you should have at least somebody that you can talk to where you don't mind if they know that, you know, it's not that it's required that you go get hire a skywriter and, you know, put it across the sky. But you do need a circle of friends, or at least one person, who's in good standing, high standing, that you can talk to. It should be upline, or at least a peer, not downline. So establishing that kind of social network in one's life preemptively is really important. And talking about things really deeply. And even in those circumstances where you have a trusted friend, it takes a while to be able to reveal yourself, reveal what's really going on with you. But it's extremely important to do that. Generally, I try to protect my image at all costs. And in healthy advancement in devotional service, we should be able to be vulnerable and understand that I'm not my body in fame or infamy. I'm steady in whatever situation I'm in. Thank you. Okay, so now, some lessons. Bharat Maharaj was a great king, and he was also extremely spiritually advanced, so he left his kingdom, and he went off to the forest, and he began his process of devotional service. And he had reached a very exalted state when he had a slip-up and got deviated from his practice of devotional service. As the story goes, one day he was sitting meditating, and he saw a deer who was by the water, a stream, and then a lion roared and frightened the deer, and then the deer jumped to get across the river, and when she did, she had a miscarriage, and a little fawn came out, went into the water, and out of trauma, the mother deer died. So Bharat Maharaj was performing meditation, and then he saw the little baby deer helplessly floating in the water, and he picked it up and brought it back to his ashram. And then he began to take care of it. And then it distracted his entire practice because he became attached to the deer. And after some time, he was feigning meditation, but he was actually thinking about the deer. And the little deer was hanging around. He had grown attached to Bharat Maharaj, so even while he was meditating, the little deer would come and chew on his kusha mat and contaminate it. And then he had little horns coming out, so he'd come up and he was nuzzling up against Bharat Maharaj's leg while he was meditating. Bharat Maharaj was like pretending to meditate, but looking down to see the deer, and kind of, he fell in love with the deer and became more and more obsessed. And then death came, and when it did, he was raging mad, and looking at the moon, saying, "Oh, footprints on the moon, those are from my beloved deer," and so forth. So being fully absorbed, and as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Yang yang vapi smaran bhavam, tajat yante kalevaram, tam tame vaiti kuntiya, sadatat bhava bhavita." Wherever your consciousness goes predominantly at the time of death, that will determine your next body. The way Prabhupada puts it is, whatever the subject matter attracts the attention of the dying man, that is the indication of his next life. So, Bharat Maharaj then, of course, took birth as a deer in his next life. However, he retained his remembrance of his previous practice and his previous life. It was very clear. And therefore, as a deer, he went back to the ashram where he had been performing Ashtanga Yoga and continued his practice. In his next life, he became Jad Bharat. So to extract a lesson in the context of the subject matter tonight, the Bhagavatam says, and I extracted this from the text and the purport, the reason he fell down, these are the three reasons given. One was foolishness. The second is misplaced compassion. And the third was willful neglect of sadhana. What are the three? Foolishness. Misplaced compassion. Willful neglect of sadhana. WNS. The dreaded WNS. Willful neglect of sadhana. So we can see that as Prabhupada writes in the light of the Bhagavad, as I mentioned in class the other night, going back to Godhead is not a plaything. And it's a regulative principle. One should not fall down, so one should be careful to guard against foolishness. No tomfoolery allowed. And also misplaced compassion. No misplaced compassion means keep clearly in mind that the spirit is important, but the matter isn't. It doesn't mean to be neglectful of people or antisocial, but it means to keep clearly in mind that the ultimate goal of life is spiritual. And then finally, willful neglect of sadhana. This is a subtle area, because how do you know if it's willful, or you're just, what is a intentional fall down or neglect, and what is accidental? It's somewhat related. Prabhupada mentions about fall downs, that if one comes back to the practice, then it was accidental. And if he continues to stay away from it, then it was intentional. But in any case, one should check oneself and see that I'm not willfully neglecting sadhana. for some of the other reasons, like I'm already liberated, therefore I don't need to do this, and so forth. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he went back to his spiritual master, he presented himself as a fool. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that one should always keep oneself in that position. Not that one should act like a fool, but one should consider oneself to be a fool and see that there's that I'm not developing an entitlement mentality, and therefore I can willfully fall down. So then Ajamil, he's also a classic case of fall down in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Ajamil was a dutiful Brahmin in his youth, and then as he was growing up, he one day, as walking down the street, he saw a man and woman embracing on the street, which is a very uncommon sight at the time, and it caught his eye, and the imagery of the man and woman embracing there stuck in his mind, and it disturbed him, and he couldn't shake it. So then he gave in to that, and he actually went later and he searched out, she was a prostitute the man was with, and he searched her out, and he pursued her, and then he actually asked her to move in with him. He started a whole new lifestyle, which required all kinds of nefarious ways of earning livelihood. He had many children by the prostitute, and just became engaged in a kind of life of wanton sense gratification with complete forgetfulness of his spiritual practice. And he had, in the course of raising sons, even when he was very elderly, he was in his 80s and he had a small child. But because of his previous practice, he named the child Narayan. And he became very attached to the child. So he would call for the child, "Narayan, please come here and take your food. Narayan, come, please come take rest." And he was saying, "Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. Sing Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. Narayan." So because of his utterance of Narayan, he was getting purified. Not that he was getting purified. By saying Narayan, he was purified because of the principle mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, apana samsritim gaurandhyan nama vivishogranam tata sadyo vimucheta yad pibheti swayam bayam. That the holy name of the Lord and the Lord are non-different. And if one utters the name of the Lord, then one's directly in contact with the Lord. And this section of the Bhagavatam describes about how by even indirectly saying the name of the Lord, that is not intentionally, one says it indirectly to indicate something else, one still gets purification. So he was getting that purification. When the time of death came, he was frightened and he called out for his youngest son. He said, "Narayan." So the Yamadutas came and they captured him because he had been extremely sinful. And they were about to take him away when the Vishnudutas came and they told them, "Stop, you can't take him." And the Yamaduta said, "Why? We have every right to take him because of his sinful activities." And the Vishnudutas then explained to Shastra why this person was no longer eligible to be taken to Yamaraj. And the Vishnudutas defeated the Yamadutas. The Yamadutas went back to their master, Yamaraj, in defeat. And the Vishnudutas, well, what happened was Ajamil had heard the conversation between the two. Even as he was in a suspended state, he heard what they had said and the conversation. And when he came back to consciousness, after the Yamadutas had departed, he saw the Vishnudutas attempted to speak to them and then they disappeared. So then he went to Hardwar to finish his devotional practices, and after he had done that, then he went back to Godhead. So, in the story of Ajamil, we might like to know, why did he fall down? And these are the three reasons given in the Srimad Bhagavatam why Ajamil fell down. First is accidental exposure. Second is weakness of heart. And third is bad association. What are the three? And bad association. And then another personality is known to have fallen down, that's Indra. And Indra, especially, of course, he's somewhat notorious for making mistakes here and there. But in a particular pastime, he's an assembly of his followers, and they're all worshiping him, and he's sitting on a big throne. And as he's sitting there, his spiritual master, Brihaspati, walks in, and Indra doesn't get down from his seat to offer respects to his spiritual master. And and his spiritual master notices this right away, that Indra's puffed up and he's not even acknowledging his guru. And so he doesn't say anything, but he turned around and walked out and disappeared. And when Indra realized what had happened, he jumped off his big throne and he went running to find his spiritual master, but it was too late, he was already gone. And this precipitated a downward spiral for Indra and all the demigods because of his offense to his guru. So the two reasons that Indra fell down are given in this section of Bhagavatam. One is pride, and the other is offense to the spiritual master. There's a lot of explanation about the implications of these two things given in that section. And finally, Saubari Muni. Saubari Muni was a great sage, but he had offended Garuda, and therefore his fall down is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam as an offense to a Vaishnava. So in summary, here are some of the ways in which the Bhagavatam, through lessons, tells us the reasons that one might fall down from one's exalted position. And they are, in the case of Bhartmara, foolishness, misplaced compassion, willful neglect of sadhana. From Ajamil, we have accidental exposure, weakness of heart, bad association. From Indra, we have pride, offense to spiritual master. And from Saubari Muni, we have offense to a Vaishnava. Any comments about the list? Yes.
I just find it useful to have it all in one place like that as a meditation. You know, this is the minefield, don't step here.
Yeah, you could have it on one of these little cards and look it up if you need to. Keep it in your pocket. It's like, hold on a minute, something comes back. Let me check. No, I can't talk to you right now. You're bad association. I'll see you later, much later. What else? Yes. Tushta, then back to Prabhu, and then back to Shamyaprasa.
Just appreciating the point that these are great exalted personalities, and they're not subject to our judgment, because we might read and say, oh, look at that Bharat Maharaja. These are actually very exalted personalities, so what to say of us? So how much more careful we need to be. And also, at the same time, it reminds me a little bit of Madhurya Kundalini, how if one does go through this, one doesn't need to default to like isolation and depression, because these personalities made a comeback and kind of reset on their path. And so to also not, along with not shaming and judging these personalities or others, to also not do that to ourselves and take the positive path of resetting, regrouping, in our practice and determination, you know, apichetsudaracharo principle. So for ourselves, as, because it's easy, even sometimes one might think, hey, Bharat Maharaj, and you know, subtly we might make a judgment towards him, or Ajamil or Indra, but these personalities aren't subject to our, you know, analysis. They're very great personalities and we can learn from them, but also it gives us hope that if there is a setback, then there can be a positive approach to that comeback versus isolating ourselves and almost like falling down to depression or hopelessness.
Yeah, these are excellent points, and some of them are upcoming. And one of them, however, that isn't, that's related to what you just said, in the Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami makes a surprising statement, and that is that in the case of both Bharat Maharaj and Sobhari Muni, their fall down was intentional in order to show the rest of us how to make a comeback, and also that the material world is very dangerous. So his point was that they did this as to teach us the lessons of what happens, and that they are extremely exalted devotees. Thank you. Shami Pras, you had something else you were about to say.
I was appreciating how Srila Prabhupada said that we should keep our eyes, I forget how he put it.
Trained
to spot offenses in ourselves.
Spot offenses.
And so then, combined with this list, you know, it seems like it's a nice practice to, you know, am I being disrespectful to the spiritual master? Am I being offensive to devotees? What is my pride at? You know, am I unnecessarily exposing myself to things I don't need to be around? Am I willfully neglecting my, different things like that can be a nice part of our sadhana to look at.
Maybe there's like a technology for that. I know they have these little clips that you put on your finger and it tells you what your heart rate is. You could have one for pride, you know, put it on there. Ooh, I think I need to sit down for a minute. But we should have a way of looking at that and measuring it. Partly, it's helpful to have people who are, to be around people who can correct us also. Don't keep yourself always in the company of sycophants who won't tell you when you're doing something wrong. Yes, Nagar.
Thinking about how we hear that the root of all the offenses, at least to the holy name, is inattention. So I was wondering if we just are attentive in our chanting, if that will, because it's overwhelming sometimes to think about all these different things, and you know, it's going to come from the left side or the right side, who knows where it's going to come from behind. But is it correct to just take solace in the notion that just simply by perfect attention in my chanting that I'll be purified of any possible offenses?
Well, it certainly won't hurt. This is the definition of the clearing stage, when one gets so much benefit from chanting, and that is that you're actually trying to listen to the name and you're not letting your mind wander and so forth. You know, in one sense, yes, by fully concentrating on the holy name, there's a way that we'll become more aware and sensitive of the other kind of offenses. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the section of the cleansing of Gundicha temple, goes into great detail about the importance of being meticulous in all the aspects of one's life. And in the cleaning of the temple, Mahaprabhu cleaned it twice inside and also outside so no dust would come back in. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta then catalogs the various kinds of offenses that one might make and the kinds of things that might arise in one's heart that can hold one back in devotional service. It's a considerable list. And knowing these things, I mean, gardeners know that there are various kinds of weeds that, and predators that come into the garden. And some of them require very particular kinds of remedies. I mean, there's a certain kind of weed that comes in my yard every year. My gardener warned me that if you let it go too long, it explodes. It's like one of those little improvised, what do they call them? IED? It's like an IED. If you touch it in the wrong time of the season, it goes pop. You know these things? And the seeds go, maybe it's a California thing, they go flying all over the yard when you touch it, so you have to get them early. And, you know, there's some kinds of things that are more pernicious than others, and you have to be careful. So good gardeners, you know, figure all these things out. And they see that, you know, what are the different kinds of predators, how to avoid them, and so forth. So In one sense, yeah, if you just chant Hare Krishna with full attention, you'll be helped and you'll come to the perfect stage. But part of that is that you'll have the intelligence to see these other things and to avoid them. We'll take one more. Yes.
What's your advice for someone who has an aversion to authority? Like a hard time taking instruction and I don't remember the first part of what I was going
to
say. But
okay. Yeah. Yeah, aversion to authority. Well, I've seen this a lot and it has a lot to do with the reason for the aversion. And that can be complex, you know, why a person is averse to authority. But I've seen people who are unusually averse to authority. It's kind of an interesting situation, you know, someone who comes especially to Krishna consciousness and then is averse to authority, because there's sort of a sense of aligning oneself with authority when it comes. But it happens. And there's I've seen that every pot has its lid. And that means that sometimes people come and they're averse because they don't see anybody they trust. And, you know, they'll spend a lot of years not actually taking the path of surrender because they're averse to authority. But then one day they'll see somebody and they'll think, I like that guy. Or I like that, you know, devotee and their style. And they'll gravitate towards them and say, can you give me some advice? You know, I'll follow you. And everyone else is going, how come you... but there's a living entity, a guide for everybody somewhere, and oftentimes it takes a while for somebody to find the person that they can trust in Krishna consciousness, and then follow their authority. It's a matter of the heart, for the most part, that one appreciates a particular person, the way that they're presenting Krishna consciousness, the ideal of their life, and so forth, and they just have a good feeling about the person. So then they say, yeah, you know, tell me what to do. It's one of the last things living entities in the material world like to say, is like, tell me what to do. It's pretty dangerous to say that because I can lose my independence. I'll put myself in your care. So finally, how to make a comeback. Remember the title of this presentation is failure to is the pillar to success. And if you remember that, then no matter what kinds of missteps you may have, you can think of it as an opportunity. And here are some of the most important tenets of making a comeback. And these I've extracted from devotees who have made good comebacks. So the first one is don't go away. The second one is own the problem. And the third one is chant constantly. What are the three things?
Don't go away.
Second?
Own the problem.
Third?
Chant.
Yeah, these three things will allow you to come back. So just because you had a problem doesn't mean you should go away. You should stay, and that's shastric. I mentioned this, the verse earlier. It starts, Supada mulam bhajata priyasya taktanya bhavasya hare priyeshaha vikarma yachchot patitam katanchit dunoti sarvam hridi sannivishta. So this verse says, hridi sannivishta, the Lord's entered within in the heart of the devotee, and he knows your intentions. So if you fell down, and you just keep practicing devotional service, then he'll rectify the situation. Sometimes things take longer than others. Some rectifications take longer than others, but Krishna always has a way to rectify the situation. And the other is to not become a victim and say it wasn't my fault. Because if you do that, you can never make a comeback. That's a similar point I made earlier about justification. If you let Maya into your house, and then you say, well, you know, she doesn't have any place to stay, or, yeah, I need it for the rent, or, you know, whatever it is, whatever excuse you make, that then you won't be able to overcome that. But if you own the problem, say, it's all my, you know, it's my fault, I put myself in a situation where I was exposed, or I, you know, let down my guard, or whatever. So, own the problem. And this is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, as you all know, 10th canto, 14th chapter, 8th verse, Tate anukampam susumikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam hridvagvapurvir vidaram namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sadaya bhak. Lord Brahma says that whatever kinds of reactions come to us in this world, we should consider, I've caused myself, I've perpetrated it. And you should own your situation here in the material world. By doing that, then he says you're able to go back home, back to Godhead, by accepting responsibility. And thirdly, you should chant constantly. Chant more. In fact, even if you're making offenses while chanting, you're chanting offensively, then the prescription given in the Shastra, what is the main verse? Nama parada yuktanam nama nyeva harantyagam pravishani prayuktani tanyevarta karanicha. The Padma Purana says that if you're chanting offensively, the remedy is to chant constantly. Don't stop chanting. Because if you continue to do that, generally the tendency, if you're chanting offensively, then what will happen is you'll stop chanting because you'll lose your taste. Therefore, Padma Purana says, keep chanting. And then when you come to the point of Namabhas, the beneficial rays of the holy name will come in and it will transform your life in such a way that you'll be able to make rapid progress in devotional service. So chanting constantly is recommended in the Shastra. And then to remember that discouragement is Maya's most effective tool. You get discouraged and you say, oh, I can't do it, I'm not worthy, and so forth. And this is also Maya's effect. So don't get discouraged, because Krishna is all-powerful and all-merciful, so you shouldn't think that I can't make advancement now just because I had a slip. And the Bhagavatam also says you should feel regret but not depression. Don't become so regretful that you become depressed and then you can't do anything. There's some remorse is purifying, but depression is not helpful. Some quotes from the secular world. Isn't it nice to think that tomorrow is a new day with no mistakes in it yet? That was from Ellen Montgomery. And then from Albert Einstein, anyone who has never made a mistake has never tried anything new. And I read to you on the first night from the light of the Bhagavat, or maybe it was in the morning, I can't remember, but it was that even if you have no desire for it, devotional service is so powerful, after you've started the process, by its own force it will come and bring you along. And if I can have 11th canto, 5th chapter, 33rd verse, then I will read you something that will not only astound you, but it will make you feel so encouraged that it will increase your desire to perform devotional service, and you'll never become discouraged. So if you don't want those things to happen, then at this time, please either cover your ears or go into the waiting room downstairs, and we'll call you when I'm done. Thank you. This is a verse which is spoken by Karabhajana Muni, and there's a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in this verse. Everybody ready? I warn you to cover your ears if you don't want to be encouraged.
What's the verse again?
11:5:33. Okay? And near the end of the in the middle of the purport, the servants of Srila Prabhupada give this commentary by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who writes, in this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has stated, Kalau Dravya Desha Kriyari Janitam Durvaram apavitram api nashankaniyam iti bhavaha. In this age, the world is so polluted by sinful life that it is very difficult to become free from all of the symptoms of Kali Yuga. Since one who is faithfully serving in the missionary work of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu need not fear occasional unavoidable symptoms of Kali Yuga. The followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu strictly follow the four regulated principles of no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, and no gambling. They try to always chant Hare Krishna and engage in the service of the Lord. However, it may happen that by accident, an occasional symptom of Kali Yuga, such as envy, anger, lust, greed, etc., may momentarily appear in the life of the devotee. But if such a devotee is actually surrendered at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by his mercy, such an unwanted symptom or anarta will quickly disappear. Therefore, a sincere follower of the Lord should never be discouraged in the execution of his prescribed duty, but should be confident that he will be protected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I rest my case. And anybody who went downstairs or covered their ears can be called back in now. Yes.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much. I had a question regarding, you had mentioned like don't feel as if you can't come back from like a fall down or an offense.
Mm-hmm.
There was one time where there was a devotee or somebody who was aspiring to be a devotee, like was interested and was, well, he was a devotee, he was practicing and he was trying to move into the temple in LA, and he was, I think he stayed a few nights, but then somehow they did like kind of a background check on him and he ended up making an offense at another temple, and the temple president there said, oh, he made a big offense, you know, like unforgivable, you know. And he, I remember the quote he said was like, maybe next time or not this lifetime. So if somebody makes an offense like that to a devotee and they feel like so strongly about, you know, kind of like not letting go of that, how does one come back from that?
Well, it depends what it is. I mean, in cases where there's some highly immoral offense, I mean, in the cases of child abuse or something like that, it's very difficult to remove that stigma. And it takes a long time, and it might take another life, you know, to come back completely clean and free from that. And nonetheless, the general principle is that one shouldn't give up. One should find a place where one can have devotee association and go on practicing devotional service. From the point of view of the person who's being shunned, there's always some place that one can find some kind of shelter to perform devotional service. And it may not be in one of the very noteworthy temples where there's a lot of exposure. And it really depends on the person. Oftentimes this happens in a very practical way. Somebody is maybe an immoral person, and they go to an ISKCON temple and they perpetrate some crime or some big offense, and then they leave, and then they go to another one, another place where they're not known yet. This doesn't happen as much nowadays as it did in the old days because of the technology that we have nowadays. The word gets out a lot quicker, and so do the pictures. And so, you know, if the person is an inveterate thief or something like that, then they may not have a place in the society of devotees, and they'll have to rectify themselves before they can have that kind of association. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, because in this specific example, I know that like having me and a couple other of the boys who were, we met him actually on book distribution, that's how we got him to come to the temple, but we didn't know about his background. We actually even never found out what the offense was. We knew who it was that he had offended, but we never found out what it was, but he was always very like remorseful. And I think at one point he tried to like apologize or to make some sort of amends, but the person was just kind of, was just that offended by the situation. So, like, for somebody like that, even if, like, you know, maybe he just did something.
In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the case of Kali Krishnadas. Kali Krishnadas was a servant of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he went on a tour of South India and to Vrindavan. And when on the way back, Kali Krishnadas fell down. He left the association Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He got taken in by a group of nomads who enticed him with some women, and then he got bewildered and he left. And Mahaprabhu went and saved him. He went to that encampment and he took him back, even though there was a big fight. And Mahaprabhu saved him, brought him back. When he got back to Jagannath Puri, Mahaprabhu, it was South India. But anyway, Mahaprabhu then called a meeting, and he called Kali Krishnadas, and then he also called several other devotees, and he said that, I'm now relieving him of my service, see his character, I reject him. And Mahaprabhu got up and left. Kali Krishnadas began to cry. And a day or two later, Nityananda, Mukunda, and a couple other devotees got together and they went to Mahaprabhu and they said, we need somebody to go to Navadvip to tell everybody that you're back from your South Indian tour. And Mahaprabhu said, organize freely, do as you wish. So they got Kali Krishnadas and they said, you're going to Navadvip. And they engaged him in that service to rectify him. So this is an example of how Vaishnavas go out of their way. If somebody's made an offense somewhere and he's not forgiven by a particular devotee, then other devotees may jump in to help accommodate that person in a way that he can go on doing a service. So that's an example from the Chaitanya Charitamrita of what one can do. Without naming any of the particular details of what offense the person might have made. Because there are different circumstances. And as I mentioned before, some kinds of things are egregious and some things are forgivable, but if they haven't gotten forgiveness from one person, they can find shelter somewhere else. In fact, oftentimes when Prabhupada was here, devotees would have quarrels with certain group of devotees or community, so they'd write to Prabhupada and say, Prabhupada, I'm having this problem, and Prabhupada would send him somewhere else. And then you say, I can't get along with these people. And you say, okay, just come with me. You can join my party. But these things have been going on since a time immemorial. And now we've come to the end. Thank you very much, everybody, for your association over the last few days. It's been an unforgettable experience. And I look forward, we will look forward to seeing you very soon again. Krishna willing. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Gopamanande.
Marman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Hey! Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman.